Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
If you've spent any time talking politics on Twitter lately, you might have noticed a bunch of accounts that look like they belong to our federal cabinet ministers, but they don't. They come with the hashtag Parody Cabinet or Parody Government of Canada, and often you have to look in their profiles to confirm it.
Mark Garneau, great to be in Thunder Bay to unveil this painting of the SS My Credibility, capturing the moment right before it sank into the deep.
Chris Tia Freeland. Tomorrow, my retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. hit, and I'm expecting results. Our new tariff on gherkins will save our steel and aluminum industries, and I doubt @real Donald Trump will sleep tonight thinking about it.
These accounts are supposedly meant to poke fun at our politicians. And that's fine, but if there's one thing we've learned from the last American election, it's that maybe we shouldn't underestimate the power of social media. Like it or not, we're all digital citizens now. Even if you've never been on Twitter, you've had political conversations with someone who spent a lot of time there. This stuff matters offline. And with Canada's next federal election just over a year away, how concerned should we be with these seemingly innocuous accounts? It's July 6th. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. We're finding the line between satire and parody and deliberate political misinformation.
Social media is a really useful tool for people who already care about politics. It's not so great for engaging new people.
Elizabeth Dubois is an assistant professor at the University of Ottawa, and she specializes in the increasingly critical links between politics and technology. She's sounding an alarm about how much power social media has over our votes, and we need to listen. Why has this kind of become an issue? I've seen a lot of people tweeting about it. I know one of our liberal ministers appears to have filed a complaint, or at least someone on her staff did. But I've also seen over my years on social media plenty of political parody accounts. What's different about these?
The Not Stephen Harper account was created back in 2009. And there's been a bunch of other politicians that have encountered themselves in a parody form on Twitter. What's different in the most recent kind of collection of accounts that we've seen become popular is that people have been confused about them. People who have a whole lot of followers, people who are able to get a message out pretty far within the Twitter conversation. And when people are confused about whether or not it's actually parody, then questions about misinformation and impersonation come up.
Can you give me an example of what exactly happened with Catherine McKenna and that account in particular? Because I feel like that's where it all started.
Yeah, certainly in terms of what we've seen in the last week or so, the kind of hoopla that has come down and started confusing a whole bunch of people. What we're seeing is people who have a whole lot of followers. So there's somebody from the Dragon's Den who retweeted something Catherine McKenna said, the fake parody Catherine McKenna, I should say, about, I believe it was National Beaver Week. And this, he was very critical of this. And then it turned out, actually, that was a parody count. That wasn't McKenna and her office saying this. And that started this conversation about where is the line between impersonation and parody? What is disinformation and willfully misleading people, and what is actually, making a political statement in a humorous form.
And what's the government's reaction been?
So we do know that Catherine McKenna's office made a complaint about this account on grounds that it was impersonation and that it broke Twitter's own terms of services. We know that there have been a number of other people who work within government who have on Twitter said a number of things about how this is unfair. And then there's been a larger discussion around the fact that there is this question of disinformation and normalizing a political tactic where you can just confuse people and that be a way to counter your opponents kind of thing? And so that discussion is being had. But what's not being had within government, at least at this point, is a discussion about the power that Twitter and these other companies get to have in determining what is a violation of free speech and what isn't, what is a violation of other kinds of laws that we have that consistently we have to balance in Canada against the right to free speech.
So who's behind these accounts? Do we know anything about who's making them? Is it all sort of one person, one organization, or is this just Twitter users jumping on the bandwagon?
We don't really know. We know that there are a variety of accounts that seem to be supported by a lot of conservative people within the Twitter sphere, but they are not affiliated with any official political party, at least as far as we know at this point. And we don't even know whether or not it's one person or many people who have all decided that they're going to exercise their right to contribute to the political discourse and make these parody accounts.
Right. And even if we did know who was behind them, would that matter?
Well, that's the big question, right? So if these accounts are doing something that is illegal or counter to democratic practices, then maybe we would want to know who it is because we'd want to be able to go to them and say, you need to stop or you're going to be fined or whatever the appropriate repercussions are for doing something that is not permitted. But when we're talking about parody accounts, parody is something that is exempt from a lot of laws about impersonation, and it allows people to express their political opinions and ideas as long as they are clearly parody. And so at that point, it doesn't really matter who's creating it.
How do you draw the line at what has been determined to be clearly parody? Because, you know, there's a difference between The Onion, which kind of, even now, and even on social media now, The Onion is still occasionally mistaken for real news. But I still feel like there's a difference between things published by The Onion and when I see somebody that appears to be Catherine McKenna tweeting what appears to be a policy position. And unless I kind of look very closely at her Twitter bio where there's a hashtag parody in there, I'd have no way of knowing. Are there any rules governing that?
This is a massive problem because as more and more people are able to send messages out to whatever audiences they can gather for themselves on the internet, you know, we're not stuck with only the people who can own a printing press being able to share their ideas. Now, lots and lots of people can. We've got also this idea of disinformation and the so-called fake news problem that we've got. And so it means that there's a whole lot of questions about what's real and what isn't. And so then when you match that up with the fact that there aren't pretty well-defined rules about what counts and what doesn't count as parody because it can be so subjective and so contextual, it's a really tricky problem. So right now, there are some existing rules about what you're allowed to say and what you aren't allowed to say. So things like hate speech and harassment and bullying, these are not allowed. Defamation is not allowed. Impersonation in a way that's going to be detrimental to the person you're impersonating, not a thing that we allow. But what exactly does that mean? And then in the legal context, we also get into this issue of intent, whether or not you were actually trying to confuse someone or it was an accidental byproduct of what you did.
How did social media become so powerful politically?
Social media is a really useful tool for people who already care about politics to engage, people who are already interested to connect with other people who are interested and to share ideas and mobilize support. Social media is fantastic for creating or supporting that sense of community. It's not so great for engaging new people, and we know that, and that's unfortunate because one of the early promises of the internet was going to be it was going to democratize everything and lots of people were going to be engaged who previously wouldn't have been. But the really powerful part of social media that we've seen is actually those people who are already engaged and people who run campaigns, people who work in journalism, people who work in politics, on the Hill, in government offices. These people are sharing ideas and information, and that can have a much more amplified effect on our overall policy direction, for example, than, or even though I should say, there's a lot of Canadians who are not necessarily engaging in political discussions on social media.
How worried should we be for the 2019 federal election?
I think there are a number of things we need to be pretty concerned about, but there's definitely a ranking of them. So one of the studies that I've done is looking at the use of political bots, automation to share political information. And what we've seen...
And that's the 2016 U.S. election model, right? The Russian, quote-unquote, Russian bots.
Yes, exactly. So with Fenwick McKelvey, who's a professor at Concordia University, I did a study looking at the 2015 Canadian election, actually, to see whether or not we saw any early signs of Russian bots or non-Russian bots. Bots don't have to be Russian. And we saw that there was some examples, some experimentation with automated techniques, but not a huge amount. And at this point, the platform companies, because other governments are very concerned about this, particularly the U.S., the big platform companies are starting to put into action tools to deal with that and to minimize that. And so I think that that's actually something where we're seeing some action and probably is not as big a concern as it might have been 6 or 12 months ago. But there are other things that we aren't dealing with, right? So we have not at all started to think about, well, what happens once those bots are not relatively dumb bots, but become very smart as artificial intelligence is incorporated? What happens when political parties or other get-out-the-vote campaigns start using chatbots, for example, which learn through conversation with the people who are interacting with it? Those might get out of control, as other chatbots have outside of politics, and we have absolutely no idea about how we're going to deal with that.
So more transparency might help people like you, who obviously dig into this deeply, and people like myself and in the media who want to see what's fake, what's not, how people use this service. How would that help an average Twitter user determine what's a parody and what's not, what's fake news and what's not, what's a bot, what's not?
It's a really good question. And there are two ways to think about this. One is the average Twitter user who's going to come across any political content is somebody who, through media literacy campaigns, could be taught how to look for what they need to look for. And already we've seen that kind of education sort of flow through Twitter. You might remember when Twitter eggs were a thing. So it used to be when you opened a new Twitter account, you got just this egg as your profile picture until you updated it. And there was a lot of harassment that happened. A lot of bot accounts initially had these eggs as their picture. People started to learn, oh, if it's an egg, it's probably not a trustworthy account. Then what happened was the creators of those accounts started using Google image searches to find actual humans to put as their picture. Now people are used to looking for, does that look kind of stock photo-y to you? It does to me. Maybe I should question it. Right? So we start developing these techniques and tools where this relatively small number of Canadians who actually use Twitter for politics are able to develop that literacy. On the other side of things, the vast majority of Canadians are not talking about politics on Twitter. And so there, the really important piece is that people like you and I are able to make use of this data and accountability to communicate that more broadly. Because the reality is, the way most Canadians are affected by conversations that happen on Twitter is through a process where journalists and politicians bring what they have talked about on Twitter out into another space, like Facebook or a summer barbecue or a television interview or a podcast. And that's how these people end up encountering it. And so if we can explain what's happened and then also why and what the decision-making process at Twitter was, it becomes a much more complete story.
How do you use social media personally, and how do you make those distinctions and kind of stay one step ahead of the first the egg, then the Google image search, then whatever's next?
So for me, social media is pretty different depending on which social media channel I'm using. You know, I've got Facebook basically to keep up with my high school friends and my family. Twitter becomes more of a professional space, and Instagram is just for, you know, pretty pictures of food. And so when I'm trying to keep track of what I can trust and what I can't trust, I'm spending time looking at things like who's actually sent this message, what does their bio description say, what is their handle. If I were to search them on Google and put the word Twitter or Instagram in too, do multiple accounts come up? And then if multiple accounts do come up, which one seems most legitimate? And you can kind of backtrack through and use the various tools we have through the internet to find out that information. Of course, I'm a media researcher and very invested in this and have a whole lot more time probably to do this kind of investigation than the average citizen. But it's those kinds of techniques that you can start integrating into your daily life to try and get a bit ahead of this.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Elizabeth Dubois from the University of Ottawa, digging in the muck to help us all be better digital citizens. That was The Big Story. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. You can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Big Story Podcast, and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and hopefully you can tell your friends to subscribe too. That's it for now. We'll talk tomorrow.